I know he had like the half-grown instant. I know Jim's was better.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, okay, I'm thinking of Jim Paxson. All right.
Because Pax came, it was Kyle Macy that was here first, right? And then they, was that a trade? I want to say that they, that.
But Pax came here from San Antonio. Yeah, I can't remember if it was a trade or if he came as a free agent. And it might have been.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just, that, you know.
So who else is in that locker room? The one with Ed Neely in. I'm trying to picture, because that was sort of the transitional time.
Right.
You know, Michael's there.
Right. So it was.
What year?
Still had hair.
Yeah. Michael.
Fitting, but it was there.
Forrest, Scotty, Bill Cartwright. I think Scott Williams had moved on. Eddie was here in two different junctions.
Right, that was the second.
That's what I was trying. I think that was the second, but it was Pax and I can't remember. Greg Hodges, I think, was still here. You know, so the core was what stayed the same. But we talked about Jerry, the ability to put in those surrounding pieces that fit in were pretty amazing.
Could Craig have fit in you know, today's NBA where the deep three ball is so prevalent, but the rest of Craig's game beyond back then is just okay to be a spot-up shooter, but the other skills, could he have fit in the modern NBA?
Oh, absolutely. He was a much better ball handler than people gave him credit for. But, as I pointed out, with Phil had players within the system that he wanted to do specific things.
Mm.
And what was the thing he wanted Craig to be? Off the ball, moving without the ball, so that when the defense comes to help, he's open for the open three. But it also, because of the fact he could shoot the three and the deep three, that the defense was very hesitant to help, which would help open up the lane when you would use Bill or myself or one of the bigs and pull him out of the lane to set the screen roll. Or even back then, the illegal defense rules were different as well.
Yeah, right.
You know, Craig was great because before the Birdo Center opened, the Bulls worked out of the multiplex over at the border of Deerfield and Northbrook. And we would play pickup games there. That just, you know, we lived there, we'd go play pickup games. And sometimes after practice, the Bulls would come out and hang out. And Hodges, every once in a while, would grab four other guys. He grabbed, like, you know, just these four little Jewish kids. He'd be like, all right, let's go get him.
Oh, the awesome. Blackest Billy Hoyle you've ever
and
seen.
And they were like, okay, pass it to him. And he would shoot every time, and we'd win and get next. And then he'd, you know, he'd walk off and let somebody else come replace him.
As you know, because you were at the multiplex, we practiced on a court that wasn't even regulation size.
Right.
Because there was a space limit. Basically, what the Bulls did was tacked on that gym to the end of the multiplex and made an agreement that, hey, we can practice there. So literally when we were joking around and shooting half-court shots, that really wasn't a half-court shot.
And one time Stacy,
what was it, about 10 feet short?
I think so. It was like 8 or 10 or something like that. But yeah. Stacy one time came out and did like an impromptu clinic. He's like, all right, who wants to know how the triple post offense works? And we're standing around it. He was actually a really good teacher.
Yeah.
No, and he
could see that.
And he was
showing,
he's like, you stand here, just a couple of friends and me. And
that's
he was,
I got it mixed up. Stacy actually is the one that coached in Rockford.
Stacy coached Rockford, yeah. Yeah, he did. But Stacy at the time, you know, we were high school kids, and he would say, okay, now when this pass goes in here, if you're in the corner, now you cut hard. Now you come around here. This is a continuity action. He showed how to run the pinch post. Like, I might give it to you, I might not. But you got to tell me. It's sort of like an RPO almost kind of thing. But it was really funny. He would just he was
so basically you just told the Stacy story. I mean, Stacy was do as I say, not as I do. Because when I touch the ball, I'm shooting it.
You are listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX and HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670, The Score, radio.com sports station.
That was the advice that Bill Walton gave when Bill Walton.
Stacy tells you now, he says, the only guy that could guard me was Phil Jackson.
Oh, stop it. Please. Like, Bill Walton came by one of our CBA practices, and everyone's like, oh my God, that's Bill Walton. And our coach is standing there. And Walton says, I need to give everybody here one critical piece of advice. If you're listening and you are in this league, every time you touch the ball, shoot it. And our coach is like, what are you telling that for? I'm trying to run an offense here. I got to pass the ball. Every time, the only way you're going to get out of this league is by scoring. Shoot it every time you touch it. Your individual stats are more important than how good your team is.
our coach is just fuming. It was great.
Be careful what you ask for. Hey, Bill, come talk to our guys. Yeah, right,
by the way, Dan Bernstein, has it been brought to your attention? I'm guessing it has been, that your Mike Krzyzewski could double as a Mike Bloomberg. Has that come up at all?
Like too much of it. It's a Chicago, New York thing. The vocal intonation is somewhat similar, but the accent is not.
I gotcha. Right. A little bit too New Yorky.
Yeah, it could be worked into it maybe a little bit. There's a similarity to the speech pattern, I think, too.
Okay.
But there's some definitive.
So regardless of who he's imitating, they all sound the same. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
That's the way to make it work.
You know.
Got to fool them.
Absolutely. Guys, we got a packed show today. We are going to talk to Fran Charles from MLB Network. We now have Solomon Wilcox to come on the show to talk about the National Football League, the former safety and current broadcaster. We will talk to him. We will also hear a very honest 2 minutes from Bears running back David Montgomery.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go. Ask five.
Please.
Would you even consider a 17th game as a former player?
It's a valid question. It would have to be for the right. Yes, is the simple answer, but it would have to be for the right terms. It would have to be a trade-off in the amount of time I'm spending doing other things that my body's getting beat up in other ways. But yes, if it feels like the trade-off is there, I would consider it.
Three preseason games.
That alone is not enough.
Okay.
I've got some details we can get into.
But doesn't that affect the product?
Well, the main guys who are going to be the legitimate contributors during the regular season are only going to get so much preseason action anyway. So to cut off one of the preseason games means those three, as opposed to the four that it is now, will be more condensed to actual players, actual guys in the two deep getting action in those games. So if it's not handled correctly, it can have a negative effect on the product. But the overall handling of the preseason, because like Bears coach Matt Nagy is so apprehensive to put his legitimate guys out there in the preseason, then teams have started slower in recent years than they have in years past.
But that's my biggest question. How does that affect the product? Because even in the NBA, they've shortened preseason. They play fewer games. We used to always play eight. Now they play, I think, five. And you don't practice as much, and it's just the product at the beginning of the year is not that good. Will the same thing happen to the NFL?
There's not another sport out there that practice is, especially in modern times, so dissimilar from a game than football. You get better at playing football by playing football, but unfortunately it shortens your lifespan as well while that's going on, so it's a tough thing. But with the way that the practice time during the regular season will be shorter now, like I mentioned, I got some emails from veterans, committees and all that I can get into, but everything will
insights.
Be more condensed with the way that the toll on the players' bodies are going to be taken on them. So one more game during the regular season, one more game during the playoffs. If the other elements feel right, then sure. But the thing that Gene Washington, the former head of the NFL Players Association, kind of got a bum rap back in the day because it was seen that he and Paul Tagliabue were a little too tight, had too much of a relationship. Same thing when Roger Goodell took over. But he did a really good job of being at the forefront of the revenue split with the Players Association and the league. Like when I was in the league
was
in the early
2000s. Was it 53-47 now?
It was. Well, right now the players get in the mid to upper 40s. This new CBA will grant the players and get them up to about 48%. When I was in the league, it was over 50% that the players got of the revenue share. So all those checks that would go out. Now, the revenue of the league has grown exponentially over the last 20 years as well. So that's part of why the owners were looking to get that that sliding scale tip back in their direction. So the players are still getting more money overall, but the percentage they're getting of it is lower now under the current regime than it was even back when I was
there. And I know we got to go, but let's just point this out. Mm. There's only one guy in here that had his breakfast delivered to the studio.
Yeah, it's good to be king, right?
Thank you to Herb Lawrence for the caffeinated beverage that he was able to deliver.
And you
to
talk
him.
About those eight exhibition games. Not only did the NBA back in the day, the NBA played their exhibition games on like a barnstorming schedule. Like they would play them in Cedar Rapids and go down to Chapel Hill.
They would play in cities without NBA teams. Yeah, try to grow the brand.
They played in when I worked. My first radio job was in Peoria in 95, 94. And the Bulls played there, and it was a big damn deal. Everybody in Peoria was
sold out.
Oh, yeah.
Remember one year we played in Champaign, and we didn't fly. We bussed, And halfway there, we stopped at some restaurant to have our pregame meal and then got back on the bus and then went down to Champaign and played and then brought the bus back.
Should have been at Denny's. Make sure Tex could get his...
Well, Tex didn't care because the food was free, paid by the team.
You guys had to have... Maybe not you. You guys must have hated going to those venues. The small central Illinois, get on a bus...
When you're first in the league, you didn't because that was pretty cool. Because
was it? Okay.
Those were diehard fans. You knew that this was going to be their only chance to see you play.
They're going out of their way.
I mean, they were. I mean, it actually made things easy. I don't want to say easier, but that sixth, seventh, and eighth preseason game were like, all right, enough of this. Let's get ready to play. But when you went to these smaller venues and it was sold out and these people were just dying to meet you, they just wanted a high five. You learned that this was their only time they were going to be able to see you play because
okay, good. I'm glad you guys appreciated that.
Cedar Rapids, Peoria.
It was like the Beatles when they came to Chapel Hill. The Dean Dome had just opened. They used to play in Carmichael Gymnasium.
Lincoln, Nebraska.
And they opened the Dean Dome because, you know, Michael Jordan in North Carolina. And it was wild. And he played and he really, I mean, the crowd was going crazy there. And then what was the guy's name? Is it Matt Brust? Who was in camp. It was just like a football player. And he dove into the scorers table, like broke the scorers table and knocked three fans onto the ground. And I'm like, dude, it's an exhibition game, man.
Apparently, Bulls versus Sonics in Iowa City at Carver Hawkeye Arena in like the mid-90s at some point from the 412 on the
Sounds
text
right.
Yeah, stuff
that
like
up.
That. I mean, that's those things. These were fun because even though it was a preseason game, man, these fans were going nuts.
Yeah.
You know, they just
rock stars.
They just weren't sitting on their hands being like, eh, you know, we'll wait for the second half.
Folks got to see BJ return to Carver. That's pretty
that's right.
Cool.
Yeah, there you go.
All the Iowa fans there. But
and
before.
That was the other thing they used to do was even the teams would try to, like, we got to play in Nashville one year at Vanderbilt Stadium against, I remember the Utah Jazz and Iowa because of BJ. You know, just when they would bring in their first round guys, they would try to play games back in their cities because they knew they would sell out as well.
Before Will Perdue leaves, since we're on this topic, because football becoming more and more global, I think the expansion to 17 games, part of the thought there is that at some point, maybe the NFL gets a division over in London. And we're just talking a bit about London before we came in here. And for you guys in kind of the 80s and transitioning into the 90s as the NBA was becoming more global, were you guys aware of, because I don't think football guys, I don't think we're completely committed to the thought that globalization of football is legit yet, because really still no other country plays football at a high level aside, well, the United States and Canada. No other continent plays it at a high level. Basketball, it's easier for everyone else to pick it up as they have. Did you guys recognize that that was on the way in like the 80s and 90s?
No. I mean, it was, because here's the interesting thing. We looked at European players, Asian players, they were foreigners.
Taking our jobs.
Taking our jobs. We don't need them in the league.
Like when Šarūnas Marčiulionis showed up. And
right. You're like, hey, hold on a minute, man. Come on now. You know, this is the NBA. This isn't the World Basketball League.
But everyone knew Jerry had the love affair with Kukoč before he ever came here.
But we, at the time, you were so concerned about your job and others' jobs, you didn't look at the big picture. You didn't think, holy cow, if this game becomes global, just think about as you're talking about, the salary cap's going to rise and there's going to be more money invested. And I mean, Adam Silver's talking about how many hundreds of millions of dollars we're going to lose from China. And you're
the
like,
salary cap's going to go down.
China. Like, whoa. But it's in a story that people recognizing and people not recognizing. I always talk about a friend of mine played on the PGA Tour. He was a grinder. And I specifically remember this. We're in Milwaukee. I think it was Deer Run, used to be the public course up there where they played the PGA event. And we're having lunch. And while we're having lunch, and his name is Scott Gump, and he's now the assistant golf coach at Notre Dame, the Nike rep came up to him and said, hey, man, I hate to do this, but here you go. Your contract with us is no longer valid. I'm pissed.
Have a good lunch.
Well, he knew it was coming, but that made it official. And I'm like, dude, aren't you mad? Aren't you pissed? He goes, nope. I'm like, why not? I mean, you're a grinder, man. You depend on this. You provide shoes and clothes for your wife and shoes and clothes for your daughter with this Nike contract. And they provide your golf shoes and your shirts and your shirt. I mean, now you got to go out and buy that stuff. And he goes, And you know why this all happened? Tiger Woods.
Ah, yes.
They had to bring in all their contracts because they were signing this guy. And he looked at me and he goes, it's now up to me. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, the purses because of Tiger Woods are going to skyrocket. And if I play better, that measly 20 grand that I make from my Nike contract will be nothing. Now, he, to this day, says, I didn't realize it would skyrocket like it did, but just because of one guy and the impact that one guy had on the game of golf, the purses, like, just exploded. And that's kind of what you're talking about right. if you can somehow get the current players to wrap their fingers, to wrap their arms around the fact of globalization and the one extra game, how that puts so much more money into the pie.
Not even just the NBA part of it. Like, you're talking about legit jobs in other countries.
Yeah.
That you can go make a living. You can spend a career playing in the top league in Italy. You can make money in Turkey, in Greece, in Israel, in China. Like, you can go make a life for yourself.
But the biggest thing is, like Anthony's talking about, there's no other game, professional game out there that affects the human body the way football does.
Guys, thanks for the extra time. Will Perdue, always a pleasure to see you.
Man.
Dan Bernstein.
Is this like overtime? Weekend. Do I get paid extra for this?
I don't know.
Yeah, give it a try.
Mitch is actually here. Mitch is doing his big market job today. So he's here. You can go talk to him. Yeah.
I can reach into his wallet and give me a $5.
Good weekend, guys.
See talk to you guys later. Thanks, let's get the Lawrence Holmes Show started, Herbie.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Sitting in for Lawrence Holmes, it's Mark Grody.
Being taken out of context is just a way of life around here.
And Anthony Heron.
So a little heroin, and you know what I'm saying? But we were selling heroin back in the day. Okay, all the great musicians was on heroin.
On 670 The Score.
Yeah, we're back again, and on the show today, we will have of the MLB Network, Fran Charles. That's going to go down at 12:30. At 1 o'clock, we will talk to Solomon Wilcots about the NFL, the former NFL safety with the Vikings, Bengals, and Steelers. David Montgomery, you will hear two really substance-filled minutes from David Montgomery here about his offseason and his thoughts on last season.
It's like a 24-hour tease, by the way.
I know.
We've been waiting on this Montgomery sound since yesterday, I'm really excited for it now.
I did say that it would happen either yesterday or today if we had time.
Yeah,
so it's banked. It is ready to go.
Building the suspense.
Yes, Herb has it in his hands. So we will release the David Montgomery.
It's like a cassette tape?
Yeah, absolutely. At some point in time during the show, that will happen. You can get a hold of us over the phone if you'd like at 312-644-6767. We are available on the text machine too. 67011 is the way to do that. And you can follow us on Twitter. That is Anthony Heron. You can find him at Big Ant Heron or me on Twitter. That's at Mark Grody Sports. You could do it just like that if you want. You can find us on other various forms of social media like Instagram and Facebook too. Just pretty much find us. Just Google our names. That's the way it works in life, and you could find us, because I don't even really know how to direct people to my Facebook other than saying something like that.
You can get a unique URL if you'd like. I believe that's available on Facebook. Something like, you know, /Facebook/Mark Grody Sports or something like that.
I know that that
just
probably exists. I don't know if that does simplify it. I think it's much more simple in life these days to go to Google and put in one's name, because typically you can find the person that you're looking for by Googling him or her. The Bulls last night, a 103-93 loss to Charlotte. Seven straight losses now. The Bulls down 19-37. We're not talking a lot about the Bulls here today, but there was the tweet of the night, I thought, went to the Score's very own David Schuster, who is the Bulls pre- and post-game host, because he was thinking something similar to what I was thinking as I was watching that game. He said that the fans in attendance are so apathetic that they're not even booing. And this was when the Bulls were down 18 in the process of going 0-15 from three-point land. And I was thinking the same thing, because I couldn't get up any kind of genuine anger about the Bulls at this point. Like, at this point, who are you going to get mad at? Are you really going to get mad at Luke Kornet? Are you going to go off on Ryan Archie Diacono? Are you gonna slam Daniel Gafford? Like, who is it exactly? Like, there is nobody
to whom one can point their anger at this point on the Bulls. Zach LaVine? No, because he's all you got.
Right.
Coby White? No, because he's like one of the guys who just really hasn't had an opportunity this year. And he had that one game where he hit seven threes, too. So the Bulls have gotten to the point where they're not even worth...
Maybe the medical training staff?
Yeah, maybe.
You got a bunch of injured guys. Yeah. Whenever you see somebody like taping an ankle in the bench area, just start to boo if that guy comes on the Jumbotron. Yeah. So